It's 12:06 and time for Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOY. We hope that you join today's conversation by giving us a call at 260-452-1185, posting on our Facebook page, or sending us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined in the studio this afternoon by my lovely co-host, Julia Meek.
Thank you, Sarah. And, you know, it's not only the last Art-Centric Friday of the month. It's frightfully close to Halloween, and other autumnal affairs will be discussing. DID's Tana Winker is here to share downtown's last Saturday excitement, and with her is the notorious yarn bomber Dawn Purcell. Then we're grabbing a seat in the front row and or the green room, your choice, because it's Drama Times 3 in our second segment with First Press Theater's Tom Hofrichter sharing this coming month's theatrical offerings with his partners in dramaturgy from the University of St. Francis, Leslie Wood and Aaron Willoughby. But first, as we love to do, Sarah and I each have a quick pick art tip for you, a sparkling gem from the mountain of art-centric treasures to choose from this weekend that you really should consider. How did you manage to choose just one, Sarah, and what is it?
Well, not an easy feat this weekend, a lot of things going on, but my pick is this Saturday from 7 to 10 p.m. There is going to be an acoustic spoken word cafe happening at 501 East Brackenridge Street. That's in Fort Wayne, and it's going to be featuring three different poets, Emmanuel Ortiz, Jessica Lopez, and Rob Emmett, and the admission is $5, and you can go to the acoustic spoken word cafe Facebook page for more details.
A good pick, and that's a lovely venue, and what a trio of great spoken word going on there. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I am saying the Dash In Halloween show tomorrow night really does sound frightfully good. They're inviting you to show up and drink beers. I'm sure you can do other soft and hard drinks as well, while enjoying the Illegitimate Sons and the End Time Spasm Band. What a double whammy there in a good way. Costumes will abound, no doubt, and so will good cheer and wicked good music. And that's tomorrow night at the Dash Inn, which is 814 South Calhoun Street, right in the heart of DID. And there's a $5 cover, and it starts at 9.
Excellent.
So there really is something for everyone. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to let the last Friday buzz truly begin with the Downtown Improvement District's lovely marketing and events director, Tana Winker. And today it's some tricking and treating we're sharing.
Yeah, this is a very long Halloween season for us. We have 2 weeks of fun with
Frightful.
Fright Night last weekend, which was phenomenal. And then this weekend being Halloween, there's bound to be that much more to go and enjoy downtown.
You know, I have to say, the zombification, as Troy Ganser talked about last week during Fright Night and the zombie walk and everything, was just something fantastic all over town.
The zombies really took over the city.
They did.
I think. They came down and, you know, spent a good deal of the afternoon with us. And then in the evening, all the places downtown, like the Embassy Grand Wayne, museums, the History Center, all of them were just packed. And people had a really wonderful time exploring and seeing all the different activities. It was truly a great day. We lucked out on the weather. But I hear zombies went out into restaurants that evening.
Oh, yes. We saw them at the bookstore. We saw them on the street.
All over.
I mean, you were, well, I think they were part of your zombie walk team. Otherwise, there are other people from the other side walking with us. But no, it was fantastic. And the age range of shapes and sizes and big families, big groups, small groups, Facebook activity, with the pictures that they were sharing, it just made me so proud to be a Fort Head.
You know, I've gotten calls from people who are not from Fort Wayne who came in for it and were just so tickled by all the excitement they got from it and went home and said, next year we're bringing more people.
Okay.
And I think
them to that.
You know, we're going to see it just grows and grows.
And we are looking forward to what's happening next year because it's just so frightful. But in the meantime, we're not done with the seasonal celebration, are we?
No, it's the last Saturday. So downtown Fort Wayne has discount admission at many of our attractions, including Science Central, mm-hmm. and Botanical Conservatory and the History Center all offer their last Saturday discounts. And they all have special activities going this weekend.
That's delightful.
Yeah.
Or frightful one.
Science Central, for example, is doing myth-busting Halloween activities and trick-or-treating from noon to 4:30 tomorrow.
Okay.
And the History Center is going to be showcasing that new exhibition of theirs, the new Fort Wayne Innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their first new exhibit that they've built since the 1980s. So it's really interesting to go see, and it's very engaging.
I hear that it is so well done and so exciting. I look forward to it, indeed.
Yeah, so it's a good reason to go down to the History Center and check it out. And it's half-price admission, so what better reason? And Halloween weekend. The Botanical Conservatory is also having some fall programming. Theirs is more pumpkin patch-oriented, so there's great photo opportunities there. They also have their Art of the Autumn Garden. Feature exhibit going on. And from 11 to 1, you can go and hear presentations about mums and pumpkins and other fall trivial things about gardens that you might want to learn some new interesting facts. So,
it brings the outdoors in, which is a good weekend to do it because it'll be a little cool, but you can really have like a Halloween nature walk right in the Botanical Conservatory, it sounds like.
Well, and that's one of the best things about the conservatory is year round. It's always beautiful weather there.
Yes, always inspirational. Yes.
Always. And so I think it is a beautiful time of year to really appreciate the fall colors and to learn about the fall planting. So I think it will be a very good program.
I know it's been a big topic on our own Midday Matter Thursday's Outer Spaces, and yes, what a way to take the knowledge you might have even learned right here on the radio and take it with you into the Botanical Conservatory. You can do it tomorrow, and there's a discounted price.
Yeah, it's a half price admission every week at the History Center and Science Central. It says discounted at the Botanical, so I think it's $1 off.
That's fantastic.
But it's not an expensive entry to begin with.
Mm-mm.
So that $1 off is a pretty substantial deduction.
What else do you have to scare us to death?
Well, you have to go see Dick Stoner's Magic Tricks at Stoner's Fun Store.
Be careful you don't disappear.
While you're getting one of your last pieces for your costume, or if you haven't rented or purchased one yet, it's a great time to go do that. And at the same time, go and take in his free magic demonstrations. It's
yes,
a really great
window
thing
shopping.
He does.
There is ultimate fun this time of year, I would say.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's just that much more festive with Halloween and all of that going this weekend. So, got to go to Stoner's Fun Store. And then I wanted to mention ArtLink. Because ArtLink will be open, but we also have our special guest to tell us more about what's going on there.
Our notorious guest, we might add.
Yeah. But ArtLink does have their regular exhibits going and that kind of thing, as well as the activity they're doing with Dawn.
And it really is a trick-or-treat situation with, and we do have today's guest to share all that information with us.
Yeah. Tomorrow, too, at the Hour Center, where ArtLink is located, there is a reception. It's an informational event, we'll put it that way, for people who are interested in the IPFW Sculpture with a Purpose program. And it's an artist information session. So if you're interested as an artist to learn more about how to get involved in that program, come down between 10 and 11:30 in the morning. And it starts at 10, goes to 11:30. And IPFW will have representatives there to give information about their sculpture program. You know, that project is underway now, and the artists are being recruited. So it's a really good time to learn about that. And
yes, it is.
Perhaps venture off into being an artist yourself if you aren't already. This might be an exciting way attempt it.
A perfect time to get, like you say, some information, and of course in such a fantastic venue, and then in the whole hustle and bustle of the last Saturday, that will be wonderful fun too. But the whole art district downtown has just come into its own popping bloom, and I love that with all of the art centricity happening. And thank you for the chance for people to actually learn about a project such as the Sculptures with a Purpose. Yes.
Well, I would imagine most of our listeners here today are, if they're not an artist, know an artist or know somebody who might be interested in participating in this project. It's going to be a very neat thing to see these permanent pieces placed around the city that are useful. And I just think practical art, I mean, how can you beat that?
I think that all things public art is fantastic. If it can be public and practical, all the better. I'd also like to remind our listeners that this is Midday Matters, and since it's Friday, we are certainly being art-centric. It's our art-centric edition, and because it's the last Friday, we look forward to sharing everything that's wild and wonderful and happening in the Downtown Improvement District on their last Saturday celebration, and for that reason, we bring Tana Winker in.
260-452-1185 if you'd like to call in with a question or a comment. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. And support for Midday Matters on WBOI is provided by the Lutheran Hospital Transplant Center. Since 1985, Lutheran surgeons have performed more than 275 heart transplants in Fort Wayne. Information at lutheranhealth.net. And support is also provided by Three Rivers Natural Grocery and Deli, featuring organic and locally grown seasonally available produce, a full-service grocery whose roots run deep, located at Sherman and Spring, online at the number 3riversfood.coop.
So getting back to all things wonderfully art-centric happening, especially this last Saturday downtown, I don't want to call the special forces in early or anything, but I think that there's a possibility that there might be knit or yarn bombing occurring.
I hear there will be knit bombing tomorrow, and it's going to happen on the arts campus.
Uh-oh, we just said a lot of things might happen, but at this time of year, who knows? And, well, who does know? That's a good question, too. Who might have the inside story on this?
Well, we have Dawn here to tell us. Hello.
Welcome, Dawn Purcell, a.k.a. the Yarn Bomber.
Yeah, one of. There are quite a few of us in the city, actually.
Well, tell us, without being a spoiler, and it is trick or treat, why don't you tell us what you have in mind for upcoming downtown?
There may be some trees that will be heavily decorated in the art area down by Fryman Square and Art United and Art Link. They will have many multicolored things on them. They will be fun. Some will be pretty. Some are not very pretty. but it is just, it's kind of fun, silly. It makes people laugh, smile. You know, if you're having a bad day and you see it, it's one of those things you kind of, it kind of makes it a little better, you know.
For people that don't know exactly what yarn bombing is, oh, how would you explain it to them?
It is basically you either knit or crochet a piece, and you go out into the public and you sew it onto an inanimate object. It could be a light post, a parking meter, tree, just anything that's in the public eye and isn't really doing anything right now. Mm-hmm. And you sew it on there, and it can stay up for a while, or a lot of times, unfortunately, it does get taken down pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It is technically illegal because it's considered graffiti, but it is not destructive graffiti. We are not we're not defacing anything. It's very easy to take down. It's again, one of those things that makes people smile. Unlike regular graffiti, it doesn't, you know, it's not about violence or gangs or anything. It's just, hey, I have this thing. I want to make something pretty and soft and fluffy.
And so, quite literally, if something isn't moving fast enough, then they just might be wrapped in perhaps explosive, wonderful yarn. But picture a sweater on a tree, or
yeah,
a sweater,
oh,
on
yeah,
a car or a bicycle, or and that's what you get with a yarn bombing.
Yeah, a lot of times it's something they're trying to do pretty quickly, so they'll have the piece prepared before they go. They may have gone and taken measurements, scoped out what they want to do, get a good idea of how and when and all that sort of thing. So it does tend to get actually kind of organized. You might have a group of people doing it. You might have one person doing it by themselves. But it's just kind of, you know, fun, and it gets people laughing, and they take pictures and show their friends, and then their friends want to go by and see it, and it's, you know, it's something that kind of brightens people's day. I've never heard of anyone having a bad reaction for it.
Having a bad knit bombing day.
Yeah.
And for one thing, I think that the textile arts are fantastic, and they come and go in popularity, and it's wonderful to see the knitting and crocheting really back in the forefront and the highlight.
Oh, yeah.
Taking it to a brand new level would be sharing your warm, fuzzy knittables and crochetables with an inanimate object. That just makes it so much fun. So, number one, you do have to have those basic knitting or crochet skills.
Yeah.
That is, and when,
oh, yeah,
how early in your life did you get those?
My mom had taught me to crochet when I was in elementary at some point. I'm probably about 10 or so. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that. And then when I was in high school, I needed a project for home ec. So I was like, well, I'll learn to knit. So that got that whole thing going. And I've gotten a lot better in recent years. So I'm very happy about that.
I suppose the sheer volumes that once you got into your let's just say little hobby that's on the fringes of all law except the law of having wonderful fun with the textile arts, and that would be knit bombing. Now, you make me curious because mm-hmm. I admire product I have seen of other people's vices of yarn and knit bombing. But when that is done, as you say, there's a lot of planning and of course coordination that goes in. Are the pieces entirely knit or crocheted around the object, or do you come already armed with pieces partially done that you can continue to knit or crochet on an object?
Generally speaking, it's something you've prepared before specifically for the object that you're going to go to.
Okay.
It's a lot more difficult to actually knit or crochet onto an object. Mm-hmm. Like if you're trying to go around it, you're going to have to keep circling around the object to do that.
I was kind of amusing myself just picturing how it might be if we did create in the field. But yeah. In your case, not to take all of your trade secrets from you, but so you go with a piece that's partially or mostly made and then be attaching it with crochet.
Some people use zip ties if they're trying to get quick. You can use like twist ties, you can sew it on, you can crochet it on. It's just somehow getting it to stay on there without using tape or adhesive or something like that. That would be somewhat damaging to the thing you're trying to attach it to.
And as well as just cheating, and we all know that cheating at something as serious as
that's right
knitting bombing is frowned upon. What do you think of this Tana for a new festivity for last Saturday?
Well, I think this is a really fun public art piece. Gotta love that. It's not what I expected. I think I pictured people standing on each side of a tree flinging yarn over it to see what would happen.
Like a TPing.
So I'm very intrigued now that these are, you know, thawed out and crocheted and knitted completely out, and it's not literally just bombing trees.
Now that the weather is getting cooler, mm-hmm. and you just think of it as a wonderfully, beautifully colored coat of many colors, perhaps, or sweater. Mm-hmm. And may I ask, without getting your notorious past into things too badly, but when did you first? What was your very first, or when, and what was your very first knit bomb?
Actually, it was the statue at Freiman Square. I was so proud.
That was
it stayed
you.
Up for like 3 weeks. It was just this little rose with some leaves that was on his foot. I would go past and check and make sure that was still on there, and it stayed up for a pretty long time. I'm very proud of it, actually.
I have to ask too, and I know Sarah's dying to know. Were you scared of getting busted as you were doing it?
That's what I was.
Yes, I kept looking around and checking, and I'm like, I'm not doing anything, I swear.
Well, it's like the most innocent thing ever, but yet it is still technically not supposed to be there.
Right.
So it's kind of an interesting situation to be in.
Yeah, every now and then you might want to have some henchmen who are like standing lookout mm-hmm. in a couple of places.
A getaway car.
That would be great. Usually doesn't run to that.
And a good friend that is there with your bail money just in case you are not one of the fortunate ones that escapes the knitting police.
I could see this sitting in the jail and they got the infamous knit bombers in the next cell.
Oh no, everyone watch out. She's going to make you a sweater and then she's going to make you wear it.
Do you care about the type of yarn that you're using for the things that are going to be outside? Does that material play into planning?
It actually does. If you use natural fibers, there is a chance they're going to start to deteriorate or mold. Mm. And depending on what you've put it on, that could cause damage. Like if you're putting it on a tree and it starts molding, that could affect the tree mm-hmm. adversely. So you really have to think about what materials you're using and that sort of thing, which is why a lot of times it's acrylic. Man-made fiber should not mold, should not deteriorate. You know, hopefully it'll hold up a lot better and not cause any problems.
And form follows function, too, and that does it'll cling nicely and stay where it's supposed to without damaging anything. Of course, that's wonderful. Again, without being spoilers on your future in this frightful career. What do you have? What could you do if you could do anything that you would here locally?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll also know when we see it done. But no, so what would be the biggest thing that you might even conceive of doing?
Well, there was someone I met somebody who knows this person, but they actually tagged a bench at the courthouse. I thought that was like the height of cool. I would love to try and do that, but that's where all the police are, generally speaking.
That is true. And I think that it would be fun to do the bread sign, of course, too.
Oh, yeah.
But
getting that's going to need some ladders.
Pesky little slices to stand still so you could do it wouldn't be so easy either. But it sounds like that we'll all be looking forward to that. And the yarn bomber, who we won't say her name after this one, but we will have to say that if you see our own little Ms. Purcell running around downtown with anything resembling an afghan and some knitting needles or crochet hooks, then you know you've got her made.
That's
in
unfair.
The meantime, Tenna, let's have a real quick recap of all or a variety of the fun things folks can do while they're downtown.
Well, there are a few other things we didn't mention.
Then let's have
The Philharmonic is playing Ain't It a Pretty Night at the Embassy Theater as part of Masterworks. And before that, you can go over to the Grand Wayne, about an hour before the show, and get a question and answer time with Andrew Constantine right before. So that's just at the Grand Wayne across from the Embassy. The Museum of Art is having their Diaz de la Muerto exhibit, you know, the Day of the Dead exhibition.
That's one of Sarah and my favorites.
Yes, with altars on display in honor of the dead. And they also are going to have some traditional Mexican dancers there tomorrow, songs, poetry, and costumes.
That's delightful.
Cinema Center has a midnight movie with The Fly tomorrow night.
That's really scary.
Yeah, so they also have a couple of their regular movies, A Girl Model and Celeste and Jesse Forever are playing, but that night.
Is that the original?
Midnight.
The original, The Fly?
Yeah. Yes, I think it is. But I could be wrong.
It's too scary.
That.
Well, we'll just have to go and be scared to death or even more scared to death.
And if I still have time, there are several places with live music tomorrow night. At C2G Music Hall, there is some folk music with Peter Mulvey and Cheryl Wheeler.
It's a fantastic show coming up, indeed.
Yeah. Columbia Street West has Cougar Hunter.
There you go. They don't know the meaning of Halloween because they're always glam rocking it. Yes. I say that in a good way.
At Hall's Gas House, there's music by Joe Stabelli, and there is also jazz at Club Soda with the Cliff Webb Trio.
Two wonderful perennials that'll just give, really, you have something for everyone downtown this weekend, it sounds like.
Well, and if you step just outside of the downtown border at the Fillmore on Broadway is the Monster Mash. It's their third annual Halloween costume party with Duke Tomato.
Oh, my goodness. Well, then there's tricks and treats abounding every single place, every nook and cranny of the city. And thank you so much for reporting on it. What will we do without you?
And I guess you're going to hear in the next half hour about First Presbyterian's play. So I won't get in any detail on that, but that is also going on this weekend.
And if you see little sweaters on anything downtown that's bigger than a person, you know that it might be somebody you know that did it. And thank you for joining us, Dawn.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break here on Artcentric Midday Matters, but first, support for Midday Matters on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Are your investments tax-wise? More information at Reinbold and Anderson on NIPR's homepage at nipr.fm. And Allen County Retinal Surgeons, participating in a panel discussion, What Obamacare Means for You, moderated by Professor Abraham Schwab at IPFW's Neff Hall. Monday, October 22nd at noon. We'll be taking a short break, but we'll be back with more of Friday Artcentric Midday Matters here on WBOI.
After a hectic week, get ready for the weekend with the Friday Vibe on WBOI. Hi, I'm Bruce Reidenbach. Join me and Bill Forsyth for the jazz you won't hear anyplace else in Northeast Indiana. Friday nights at 7 on your home for NPR News and Jazz, 89.1 FM, HD Channel 1, WBOI, Fort Wayne.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOY News. A new report to be released next week will detail caseloads and costs for more than 400 local courts across Indiana. Indiana Chief Justice Bren Dixon and Division of State Court Administration Executive Director Lilia Judson will release the annual statistical report for 2011 on Monday at the State House. The 1,700-page report includes a variety of statistics about state and county court operations. They include the number of new civil and criminal cases filed last year, how many cases were decided by juries, the cost of court operations, and even the languages spoken by court interpreters. The annual reports are required by state law and are produced by the Supreme Court's Division of State Court Administration. The report will also be made available online. Mike Pence engaged Democratic opponent John Gregg's attacks more than in any previous debate during Thursday's third and final meeting of the three gubernatorial hopefuls. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
Pence has largely avoided going after Gregg, only engaging with him on a few points in the first two debates. But Thursday, Pence wasn't shy about matching Gregg's attacks with his own. The two sparred most over the federal government's auto industry loans. Gregg struck first.
You know, my career politician opponent drives all around Indiana now in a red Silverado. He does it because he wants you to forget about how he voted on the auto loans. He voted against them and against 120,000 Hoosiers who work in the car industry.
Pence says he believed in a plan that didn't dig the federal government deeper into debt.
But John, we could have saved those companies without putting taxpayers on the hook. We could have given them a backstop, not a handout, and I was ready to fight for that.
In the middle of the back and forth was Libertarian Rupert Bonham, who throughout the debate reminded voters that he represents a change from the status quo and that a vote for him is not a wasted one. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
It's a doubleheader for the Fort Wayne Comets this weekend. WBOY's Doug Gruber has the schedule.
The Gwinnett Gladiators from Georgia visit the Coliseum for two games tonight and tomorrow, the last home games for the Caves until November 9th. It's one of two visits the Gladiators will make to Fort Wayne this season. The Comets start the weekend with 5 points, just 1 point behind division-leading Kalamazoo. Tonight, youngsters in costume will be able to parade across the Coliseum ice in a Halloween procession during the first intermission and maybe win a prize for the best costume. And the rumors about problems with the Quad City hockey team have proven to be true. The Central Hockey League announced the league has taken control of the Quad City Mallards in an effort to stabilize the current operations, provide funding, and evaluate the ownership status in order to keep the club in Quad Cities. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
And now back to Midday Matters with your hosts, Sarah D'Elia and Julia Meek.
Welcome back to Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOY. The time is 12:34. If you'd like to join today's conversation, 260-452-1185 or nipr.fm. You can stream us online that way. You can always email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page. And support for Midday Matters on WBOY is provided by Christine and Ed Schaefer, broker realtors with Northeastern Group Realty. Trust the professionals with proven performance. Online at Christine.ed.com, the Schaefer team.
And we are going to take a few degree turn right now and still serving up art centricity. And right now it's an autumnal dose of Drama Times 3 we're serving up. And for that, Sarah, who else would we have with us but First Press Theater's Tom Hoffrichter. Hi, Tom.
Oh, you're too kind.
You are too sweet, so how could I not be too kind? What is frightful and or delightful in the theater world these days?
We have a really busy month coming up next month. Actually, there's only one show going on this weekend, so everybody has to go to that because it's at First Presbyterian
Theater. It's mandatory,
theater.
Isn't it?
Yep, it's mandatory. Okay. We got a ridiculous comedy, and I mean stupid with a capital S-T-O-O-P-I-D. It is dumb, and it's called The Servant of Two Masters. It's a lot of fun, our final weekend. Then next month, we have some really exciting things, a wide smorgasbord. A couple things that are happening is Christmas Early Fort Wayne Civic Theater and All for One Productions are both doing their Christmas shows next month. A Christmas Story is based on that classic movie with Darren McGavin mm-hmm. about the little boy that wants the BB gun. So I'm quite excited to see how they're going to turn that into a play. And All for One is doing an O. Henry Christmas, which are a series of the lovely O. Henry stories that all have holiday themes. It's a terrific piece of work. So they'll be at the library November 2nd through the 11th. Christmas Story will be at the Arts United Center from November 3rd through the 18th. IPFW's breaking with tradition. They're not doing a holiday thing. They're doing a great show called The Women of Lockerbie. Mm-hmm. It's the response of the women who basically were living in Lockerbie, Scotland, when Pan Am, I can't remember the number, but when that plane went down in the 80s. And it's a terrific new script. And they have some of their most talented young women are doing that show. So that's going to be exciting. And then we also, for those of you that love big musicals, and who doesn't, the Will Rogers Follies. And that's at the University of St. Francis in their new space. New is a relative term. It's the old Scottish Rite, but now it's University of St. Francis Performing Arts Center. And here with me today, we have a couple of folks who are here to tell me about it. We got Leslie Beauchamp and Aaron, who also works out there. So, welcome, guys.
Hello, Tom.
Hello. Howdy, as we say in the Rogers world.
Tell us about Will Rogers. I know a little bit about. He was a performer in the early part of the 20th century, late 19th. Became an incredibly popular vaudeville performer and was one of the main headliners with the Ziegfeld Follies. So I'm assuming the Will Rogers Follies somehow pick up that style. Why don't you tell us a little about the show?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of amazing when you think about his life, because in the 20s and 30s, he was actually the most popular performer in the world, because he not only did vaudeville, he did movies, he did newspaper, he was he went around and did satire, he was an observationalist humorist. So he really was on every form of medium in the 20s and 30s that they had. And so he really was an incredible person. And the show, The Will Rogers Follies, is the story of his life told in the style of a Ziegfeld Follies, because he was one of Ziegfeld stars. He had a show that was tailored around him. And what happens is every one of his important life events is told with a huge production number. So it's really a great show.
I when I think of the show, I think of him doing rope tricks.
Oh, we have roping.
And I also think of Americana in the same way I think of Mark Twain, somebody who's a humorist and who's a social commentary. Mm-hmm. What were his politics in that age? Were they part of his performing, or
it definitely was? Yeah, it was part of the way that he was, and he had this great way to really make fun of people, but yet you just had to smile about it. Right? Right, he turned everything. He would talk about how bad and corrupt things are, but yet you still would want to listen to him more and more and more. Mm-hmm. He's just so likable. Will Rogers is, and he's portrayed that way for the show too. It's really his political satire and just a satire of Americana is just so, you know, apple pie and chewing a stick of gum and having a good time.
Yeah. What was he, an equal opportunity mocker? I mean, because oftentimes today I see our political satirists and they really do seem to take sides, which isn't surprising since we live in such a polarized country. How did Will Rogers fit into that?
Actually, Tom, he was a staunch Democrat, which is the thing that I find, it's one of the reasons that I love the show. He was a staunch Democrat, but he was not shy about poking fun at his own political party. One of his famous quotes is, "I don't belong to any organized party. I'm a Democrat." He really did. And in fact, he hated campaign
season. Still
true
today.
It is. And it really is. He hated the campaigning season so much because he thought both parties just fed so much bunk, as he called it, to the American people, that he actually ran for president on the, it's called the anti-bunk party. In the musical, it's called the debunk party. And he had one campaign promise, and it was, if he was elected, he would resign the next day. But he did it specifically to point out that not just the Democrats, everybody was just awful during campaign season, which mm-hmm. is kind of apropos.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yep. It sounds like he's in the tradition of that John Stewart and Stephen Colbert are in that long line of tradition of, because if you really watch the first guy I mentioned, John Stewart, he regularly just savages both sides, which I find interesting. How is the story, because it's telling his life, how exactly does that story get told in this musical? What's the dramaturgy, if you will? What's the mechanics with which the play is put together?
Will Rogers comes out and it opens with a huge group number introducing who he is, and then Will Rogers comes out and talks about his life, and at then those specific moments there is a huge production number that happens. So it's kind of, he takes us through his own life. Mm-hmm. We meet his wife, we meet his father, we meet Wiley Post, who was the famous mm-hmm. aviator who he was with and actually died with, the plane going down with Wiley Post. So. Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming, because you're approaching this in a unique way. There's a triumvirate of directors, which there's three of you. There's Aaron and Leslie, and who's your third director?
Todd Fromeyer.
So did you like lock Todd in the car today, and that's why he didn't get to come in here?
No, he couldn't make it today. He was working.
Now, how is that working with three different voices trying to shape a piece of art? Hmm. Because that is an unusual way to approach something.
It is. And actually what we have is a single vision, but each of us takes kind of our own part in it. Todd has handled all of the staging section. I'm kind of the overview director is how I like to look at myself, and kid wrangler.
how many children are there in the show?
There are four.
All you need.
As Ziegfeld says, you don't need any more than four.
Kids and animals.
Yeah. That's the truth. And then Aaron has come in, and he is kind of, we've done some fun things with multimedia in it, so Aaron is kind of heading up that side. So it all kind of comes together. I know you think it sounds crazy, but it's working great.
No, it doesn't sound crazy. It sounds fun and exciting, but it's interesting to hear everybody has, it sounds like everybody has pretty tight responsibilities that then I would imagine kind of spill over into.
They do. Like Aaron often takes, you know, if we're working music, he will often take other groups in and work choreography. So thankfully we're very lucky. Aaron is a singer, dancer, and performer as well. So he can kind of take that over.
I'd like to remind folks that we are having our Drama Time 3 session, as we love to do at the end of each month. And today, particularly happy to be joined by Leslie Beauchamp and Aaron Willis. We'll be talking all about the University of St. Francis's fantastic Follies Extraordinaire of a Will Rogers variety. Now, I have a real quick question. Because you are getting acclimated and used to and in place with your new digs at the former Scottish Rite, now the University of St. Francis facility, what's the challenge? What extra challenge? Because you've got a lot of big production number as promised. How's that working?
Well, a big thing we had to learn is really the fly system there. We had to add a whole bunch of new flies, move around drops that we had. So just getting acclimated to that giant, because I haven't done a lot of fly work before. So mm-hmm. it was a great chance for me to learn how to, you know, really effectively, how do you change a fly effectively? How do you make sure it's notched and hinged correctly? And, you know, we also have a big stage too, so we have to make sure we have this wonderful set. So we're constructing the set now with these, you know, I don't want to give it away, but it's nice.
No spoilers, please. It's big.
It's spectacular.
So is it a series of wagons and drops? Is that what the set's being made of, or
there's no wagons? Mm-hmm. It's all drops, and we have a standard flat we have there. So we have it's going to be a lot of because I know a lot of students of mine are the ones that are mm-hmm. doing all the fly pulling, and that's where we're really gearing their hands up.
Have those flies been updated? Because the Scottish Rite was built probably in the 20s, maybe the 30s. I mean, it's a ways away. Are we talking the old pin? Because it used to be when you did flies, there was like literally a pin that you pulled out, and then the rope went up and down. Mm. But the new have counterbalances with weights. Is that what you're working with?
Yeah,
now?
The counterbalances. Yeah, okay, which has been that's been the fun because we're having new drops and we're adding new flies, which needs to be counterbalanced, which is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
So we've been working that all this week, and my arms are. Glad that we've been doing that.
Well, there's the a classic story of The Fly where a guy was playing a role who weighed like 120 pounds and his understudy weighed like 200 pounds and they didn't change and they flew him up at the end of the show. I think it was a passion play. And they didn't re-counterbalance it. So when the guy went to pull the rope, he went flying.
Literally.
So that is a challenge. Who's designing for you out there?
The set is designed by Rick Cartwright. He is actually the dean of the School of Creative Arts. He's done most of the set design work out there, and he has a fabulous team. It is a gorgeous set. Mm-hmm. Our lights, of course, by the wonderful Mr. Jim Wasson. And then Nate Decker, who is a student out there, is doing our sound design.
And the sound, have you guys invested in, by you guys, I mean University of St. Francis invested, are we talking body mics? And how big of an orchestra are we talking about? Talk a little bit about the music for this show.
Oh yeah, I mean if you've been to the Scottish Rite, many of you may not have even seen the pit down there because the stage has been covered. I mean, the pit mm-hmm. stage has been covered for so long. Mm-hmm. So we removed that a couple weeks ago, and it's really, you know, we've got that all nice and done. It's a beautiful space for the pit to come in. I don't remember the exact number of pieces in
there. 9 to 12,
yeah.
I think.
It's wow. nice.
So
I know
big orchestra.
It's a big orchestra. We're gonna and what is the other question? As far as the pit, the music, the mics, yes, we all have enough mics for everybody to have their own lapels. So we got all that set up, and we're
so they're going to have a great visual, great sound, great cast. Who are some
it's
of the folks who are in it? And how did the lead happen to get cast, Leslie?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you this.
Did you listen to the other two directors when you cast your husband?
It is really funny. I have to tell you this. When we were looking for a show, we had two kind of ideas that we wanted to honor the history of the space because it does have a very rich and storied history, and we found that the Ziegfeld Follies actually did perform there. It wasn't with Will Rogers, it was with Fanny Bryce, but they did perform there. And then we knew it was a political season, so we kind of wanted to find a show that fit both of those niches. Mm-hmm. And we came upon this show and we thought how fabulous it was. And then I did not think of Brad, because Brad was in his director mode. You know, he has been directing lately, so he had his director's cap on. And it was actually Todd who said, you know, who would be great as Will Rogers is your husband, because he has a lot of the same qualities as Will Rogers. And I thought, I felt really bad. And I know Brad's probably listening to this, and I'm sorry. But I felt bad that I didn't think of him, because he is such a fine actor, that I just thought, you know, you're right. And the more we got to thinking about it, and I did ask Brad, and he did not jump right on and say yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really did. Mm-hmm. He took some convincing. Mm-hmm. But he was concerned about the roping. There's a lot of roping in the show.
Yeah. But he's doing his darndest.
He is. I'm so proud of him.
That's a skill, because I could see, like, learning the roping, but you also have to talk at the same time.
Yep. And chew gum.
And chew gum, yes.
And just in case she's listening, honey, my wife, I always think of first.
Thanks, Tom.
No, but you're right, Brad. This is a great role for him, because the minute that I saw Will Rogers and saw that it was at USF, I immediately wondered whether Brad was going to do it. Who else? Tell us some more about who's in the show.
Well, Betty Blake is played by the lovely and talented Miss Susan Moriarty.
Oh, she's terrific.
She's playing his wife, yes. And of course, we have Gary Lanier,
who
is playing Clem Rogers, Will Rogers' father, at all. There's kind of a joke about that. And then Ziegfeld's favorite is the lovely and beautiful Bridget Pearson, who I adore. And Wiley Post is Tom Scribner.
Ooh.
Yes, so we have a great group
Good
there.
Cast.
And then,
how big is the cast?
35 we have a cast of. And so, yes, we have a ton of former USF students, current USF students, graduates, alumni. We've done some outreach.
Yep.
So we have some Homestead High School seniors, and then we have some community members. So lots of people.
And another thing, again, the numbers of people and the wonderful numbers you're doing, costuming has to be a lot of fun, but also a lot of responsibility. How are you handling that?
Yes, costumes were actually our major concern when we did the show, because, as you know, Tom, when you're picking
expensive.
Out a show, it's easy to say, oh, that's a great show, let's mm-hmm. do that. And then when you start looking at it, so we actually found a place up in Chicago called Broadway Costumes, and they are fabulous. We took a field trip, And we went up there, and they were actually pulling the Will Rogers Follies costumes for another theater that was doing it in Chicago. And they were very gracious, and they allowed us into the warehouse to see all the costumes that they had. And so that's how we solved that issue, is we're renting them from them. And they're great, because what they do is they take the national tour, and they purchase their costumes. Mm-hmm. And then they also have a whole bevy of people in there sewing. And so they will mm-hmm. actually make costumes mm-hmm. for you if they don't have your size. So it's really a great place, yeah.
Yeah, because especially when, I mean, Will Rogers Follies, and what the Follies yep. were known for were those spectacular costumes. So
we have those.
But we are family friendly.
That's right.
Oh, well.
You're covered up.
I guess you can't have everything. we talked a little bit about the triumvirate of directors, and we talked about the music. Who's running your music for you and your choreography?
Greg Vey is doing our music direction for us. He's in charge of the orchestra. We also have
Ben Wedler.
Ben Wedler is our he's doing all the vocals for the cast and getting everything ready for that direction. As far as choreography,
we have the lovely and talented Miss Abigail Enger.
Oh, she's so good.
Yeah. Her last work that I saw was her work in Chicago, mm-hmm. which was some of the finest choreography I think this town has seen.
She is amazing.
Really
I love working with Abby. She's yeah. spectacular. Mm-hmm.
She's so dedicated, and she's really on point with the students, and she knows exactly what she wants when she comes into rehearsals, which is what you can ask for is for a choreographer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've talked a little bit about why this show now, but let's talk about it a little bit more, because I'm always curious as somebody who, I mean, I'm in the process right now of trying to find the six shows that are going to be on 2013-2014 at First Pres, and a lot of things go into it. And one of the things are, what do I need as an artist? And is it a show that this community needs to hear right now? And do I have the actors? And like Leslie was saying, financially, is it something we can do? Because there's a show I absolutely love, The Matchmaker, that I look at every year and I go, I just can't afford to do that. It needs four sets. But what were some of the things when you were kicking around, and who were the minds who actually were part of making these decisions, and how did that work?
So many minds. There were actually there was a group of us, and actually we discussed it in different kind of groups. Marin, Aaron, clearly me, Todd, Brad, Mr. Cartwright. There were a lot of us that were doing this brainstorming, as you do when you're looking for a show. There were three basic rings that we wanted to cover. Aside from the points with, you know, we wanted to honor the space, and we wanted, you know, to take into account that it's a political year. We wanted to have something for the current students, the new freshmen coming in, something that was exciting, that we could, you know, capture new incoming students. We wanted something for the students that were already there. We wanted to use it as, since the space is right there downtown, we wanted to use some community members. We wanted to make sure that we brought the community in. But then we also wanted to use it as an outreach, to go out into the high schools and try to let people, recruiting happen, so that we could say, come out, come spend some time with us in this show and see what an amazing thing we have going on down here. So that really played into it a lot.
Mm-hmm. And how many classes are now in the St. Francis curriculum in terms of theater, and mm-hmm. how is that coming along? Because I talked to you, I think it's been 6-8 months now since we last talked, and this is now your second year as mm-hmm. a professor of theater at mm-hmm. University of St. Francis. How's that coming along?
It's coming along. I mean, we're building it back up. I mean, we're building it from kind of the beginning ground, so mm-hmm. these kind of shows really start to get the students in the classes, and I know I'm really excited. I'm teaching a class in the spring. It's a voice and movement class that I know there's at least 7 or 8 kids that I know are interested and ready in that. And I think it's, you know, we're building on to every class that we have. I'm trying to get we're getting a voice and movement class, like I said, an acting class, a theater appreciation, kind of starting from the basics that are really going to start building the foundation for students to be involved in these shows and just to be better actors in general in the mm-hmm. community.
So it presents the more of the opportunity, not only for the students to be on stage, but learn some of the tools they need to step
exactly.
on
so
the
stage. Once we learn things in the classroom, you can apply it to, you know, real life situations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds terrific.
Yeah.
I guess I want to go back to working with Brad, because it seems like no seriously, because as somebody who I direct my wife a lot,
right.
and actually I just finished doing a show where we were co-actors. Are you giving him lots of notes in rehearsal, or is that primarily one of the other triumvirates?
That is Todd. I allow that to be taken over by Todd and Aaron. Brad and I have worked as fellow actors. We have worked as actor director in both ways. He has directed me, and I have directed him, and I have choreographed him. So I'm sure, like you and Nancy, we have we just know when to put different hats on. But yeah, he is doing a great job, and for me. At home, I'm more helping him, you know, memorize lines, roping. But yes, I that's why, you know, I think it's easier for Todd to have that vision and give him those notes. Aaron, when mm-hmm. he looks in on it, I think it's just easier for them that way.
Yeah. I mean, for us, I think it's a little, for Nancy and myself, it's a little different because that's the relationship we started with. Mm. I mean, I was directing her in a show when we started dating. Uh-huh. And so therefore it was, that was always a natural relationship. And so it's kind of a switch that we flip that goes back and forth. Because I remember the first show after we had been dating when, you know, she had a romantic lead and I was, you know, telling the guy, come on, kiss her, kiss my wife. Well, you know what I mean? And,
like this.
Yeah. No, I didn't show him because I didn't want to intimidate him. But you know what I mean? Stepping away, because you're stepping away from that relationship. But as a director, the more you know about the folks that you are directing mm-hmm. and the more of a relationship you have, I think that the better you can direct them because you know what the right words are to say.
Yeah. And he's pretty, I mean, you've worked with him too, Tom. He's pretty easy. I mean, he's pretty easy to direct. So he's a great guy.
Yep.
Well, let's hear a real quick, of course, a recap of your, when folks can see this, but also give us a takeaway list that the audience is going to really enjoy with this, in particular with this presentation in this facility.
The most well-known piece of music that is from the show is Our Favorite Son. It's the campaign piece. Mm-hmm. It was done on the Tonys. It's done in all kinds of show choirs, but it's a really fun number that takes place across the whole stage. It's in Red, White, and Blue. It's actually a fabulous number. Mm-hmm. It's done a lot. And the opener, Willamania, is another one. But there are lovely ballads in it, and it really does have, it runs the gamut of all music, you know, all everything you could ever want.
As folly should, and it also sounds like it gives an excellent flavor of the times and the man, and of course your facility.
We think it's perfect. We think it's the perfect storm for this show, this time, this space. So,
I think it's exciting that that space is getting a big musical put in it, too.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
because it's the perfect space for it.
It is. It's big, meant to be.
It's about a 2,000-seat auditorium.
That's right. Yeah, about 2,000. Yeah.
And it was, it was refurbished not too long ago because I've got some friends who actually have some of the old seats in their basement. Uh-huh. but, yeah, it'll be a terrific place to see the Will Rogers Follies at.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, this month we have Christmas coming early. Sometimes Christmas isn't coming at all, and we've got lots of other good things to visit. So what might we be recommending?
We've got basically, we're coming up on 5 shows tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 at First Presbyterian, Servant of Two Masters, a ridiculous comedy.
That's silly.
Yeah, it is silly. Silly, silly, silly. And then next weekend, November 2nd, an O. Henry Christmas, All for One Productions. And if you haven't been down to the library and seen a show in the library's mm-hmm. new theater and in the library that was rebuilt mm-hmm. Several years ago, you really should. And All for One was a kind of a nomad theater for years. It was looking for a space, so they do wonderful things down there. And then the following, and also A Christmas Story at Civic opens next weekend, which is based on the classic movie. Then the following weekend, Will Rogers Follies, Big Fun Musical, and The Women of Lockerbie.
There's a lot of wonderful seasonal celebration going on dramaturgically, I would have to say. And thank you so much, Tom, for giving us the best highlights. And, of course, we would say break a leg at the...
Thank you. Yeah.
This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio broadcasting from the Matt Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne. Remember that thanks to Access Fort Wayne, you can watch today's Midday Matters tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. on Comcast Channel 57 and Frontier 27. That's tomorrow, Saturday at 4 p.m.
This episode of Midday Matters will be podcasted by the end of the day, and you can go to nipr.fm to check it out there. Julia and I will be back same time, same place next Friday at noon to 1 for more art-centric Midday Matters. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.